I call Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, April 22nd, 2026, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Please turn off your cell phones. Committee members present today, Senator Rauscher, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Dunbar, Senator Myers, Senator Klayman, and myself, Chair Giesel. I am expecting Vice Chair Senator Wilkowski along shortly. He's away on other business. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather and to Chloe, who are helping us out keeping the minutes and the running the audio for us. The one item on today's agenda is Senate Bill 280, oil and gas property tax and municipal tax. Today we're going to talk with mayors and city managers and folks like that related to the potential impacts they might foresee related to a gas pipeline project. And near the end, if there's time, we also have members of the Department of Natural Resources online for questions related to their jurisdiction. We also have online from AGDC, Frank Richards and Matt Kissinger, it looks like. So, starting out today, we're going to start with Mayor Chris Noel with the Denali Borough. Mayor Noel, can you hear us? Welcome. If you would introduce yourself for the record and give us your thoughts.
Okay, Chair Giesel, can you hear me okay?
Yes, very well.
Okay, thank you. Well, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify here on SB 280, the committee substitute. So I just, you know, I'll start by saying this, you know, we see this alternative volumetric tax as an important opportunity to enhance our current services and provide new services without imposing property taxes or raising existing tax rates. As you all likely know, we're the only municipality along the gas line without a current property tax. And so, you know, we, under the previous, you know, under an all or nothing proposition, the previous rate of 6 cents per 1,000 cubic feet, it appeared workable. And I think the increase obviously works too. I wanted to speak broadly for a second. I just wanted to flag that this legislation would fundamentally alter our abilities as local governments to collect revenue to meet our current and future needs. And, you know, I would propose that project subsidies should be proportional to the benefit received and may not be, need to be, or should be borne equally by the state and local governments. We have unique resource demands and we also have unique revenue mechanisms. Couple things, a few things I wanted to flag, things we like in the substitute. The increased rate obviously, you know, works well. It has, the substitute has the community impact fee program, and I understand that was modeled off of recommendations from the previous MAG board, Municipal Advisory Gas Board effort. That works. We appreciate that, the certainty. One thing I wanted to raise, you know, it's a concern with the lag, and I think you all as a committee have kind of considered this. There, you know, with a lag from it being based on actual miles of pipe constructed, to, you know, then the payments would follow the following year. That's going to lead to a delay when the impacts are going to be immediate. And I'll just share, you know, based on estimates shared by Glenfarb, construction could occur as soon as July 2026 through November 2029. And only a fraction of the impacts for here in the Denali Borough physically involve construction of pipe. There's other things like, you know, camps, lay down yards, temporary access roads, improvements to the easement, things like that. So I guess I just propose considering an alternative where the developer, you know, require the developer to implement some kind of community impact fee program. We could negotiate directly with them. And then I would, you know, I think we would encourage them to submit payments directly to municipalities prior to construction, investing in mitigation on the front end of development. The ramp up period was removed, and I'll just add that in general, as mayors, I think we were in support of the concept of not taxing in-state gas in the ramp up floor of 250,000 cubic feet of gas per day. We felt like that included in-state gas plus a margin for short-term growth. We definitely support the Anchorage, the inclusion of the Anchorage CPI index adjustment to the ABT. A couple other ideas would be a floor for that, like 1%, ceiling of 3.5%, or based on a rolling average. One thing I definitely wanted to flag, the removal of the broad-based preemptions of local revenue. We really value the certainty that the alternative volumetric tax is just in lieu, exclusively in lieu of property taxes. And that enables the Denali Borough to address some of the unique aspects for us, specifically in these agreements with the developer for temporary leases, for those construction camps, pipe laydown yards, and then for a long-term easement for the pipeline itself. I think I mentioned in my last testimony, of the 87 miles of pipe in the Denali Borough, about 10 miles would cross Denali Borough municipal lands directly. Lastly, I just wanted to flag, with all due respect, we don't support the ABT or the community impact payment flowing through the legislature, subject to appropriation. Definitely have concerns with that. As written, you know, and we just advocate for payments to go directly to the municipalities. And I wanted to mention community impact payments would be added on to the community assistance program, formerly revenue sharing. And this is a perennial issue that we and other municipalities have advocated for and requires that consistent advocacy. The program should be a reliable source of revenue for us in recognition of the partnership we share with the state. And the value has eroded over time. Last thing I wanted to mention is that the Denali Borough Assembly has broadly supported this project in the past. They have not considered it yet, the kind of the specifics of the legislation before you. We do intend to consider it at our May meeting, and I'd be happy to share the outcome of that meeting. And really just thank you for the opportunity to share thoughts and feedback.
Very good. Thank you, Mayor Noel. Any questions for Mayor Noel? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being online, Mayor. I had a question because you don't have a property tax. Has the borough ever thought about instituting a property tax or even growing or annexing area that might be outside of your current boundaries?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, no, I would say that, you know, we have not really considered property tax. I think there's pretty independent streak here. We value limited local government. We rely heavily on our bed tax. And just recently, the most recent new revenue we did implement was a sales tax on alcohol and marijuana. So it hasn't come up, and I don't think it's really on our radar, and we know that we couldn't target any one type of property, and so it would need to be a broad-based tax.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions for Mayor Noel? All right. I don't see any. Thank you very much, Mayor, for joining us today. I appreciate you taking the time. All right, next up on our list is Mayor Edna DeVries from the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. Hello, Mayor DeVries. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you very much. My name is Edna DeVries. I'm the mayor of the Matsu Borough. First of all, it's a little bit off topic, but I did want to thank the Senate for supporting and passing the committee substitute for the House Joint Resolution number 14, supporting the completion of the Port McKenzie rail expansion. And again, I thank you for giving us another opportunity to address you. I know you've been very hard at work. Most all of you know what sat in that chair, and so I understand what goes on behind coming up with the committee substitute. The Matsu Borough remains in favor of the alternate volume tax, the ABT, as noted in our resolution in support of the PILT concept. These are our initial comments, given the short time we had to review the current committee substitute. We encourage that version G of Senate Bill 280 retains the language that the value of the property tax is exempt from the required local contribution to education. Without this exemption, large burdens would be placed on our local taxpayers during the construction, the ramp up to full production, and any that is less than full throughout. The burden would be placed on our local taxpayers without a corresponding protection increase in revenues to fund that mandate. We do have concerns about adding a fully taxable portion to the project, the Fairbanks Spur Line, without fully accounting for that in discussing the tax amount generated by the project. According to the presentation on April 21st, 2026, before the Senate Resource Committee, the ABT revenue lists $610 million in total to be paid annually by the project. However, this cost to the project does not include any tax levied on the spur line infrastructure. This should be evaluated when considering the total amount of cost the project will incur and when discussing revenues to municipalities. We also have some concern that there is no wrap-up period. Fundamentally, the Mat-Su Borough supports an exemption for an in-state gas during phase one, so not to pass the additional cost along to the local ratepayers. As a matter of policy, a goal we should all share is to provide reliable gas at the lowest possible cost for Alaskans. Finally, giving the high estimates of tax and the ABT payments under this project, the project payments by the AKLNG project may be getting close to what would be payable under the current tax law. If this bill does not fundamentally assist the project development, the committee should consider leaving the current tax system in place. Again, thank you for giving me this opportunity to give you our input.
Thank you, Mayor DeVries. Committee members, questions? Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thanks, Mayor DeVries, for being online. Just to clarify your last statement, when we're talking about the G version of the bill, the newer version of the bill, you said you'd rather see it go back to the old tax system, which there was essentially not. It was just the AVT, but then there's, of course, a 10-year basically lag between when revenue would be coming to municipalities.
Right, right. We had in our previous testimony talked about the PILT. That's the position that the Borough Assembly has taken, and we stand still alongside that. Thank you.
So
Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you're supportive of some sort of PILT in advance of the total construction. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for the question.
Yes, Senator Myers has a question also.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mayor DeVries, I'm just curious how I understand that Glen Farne is still trying to, you know, schedules willing, you know, not always the case for busy people. But I understand that Glen Farne is still trying to meet with the mayors on a weekly basis or close to it. I'm wondering if that's still the case and how those discussions are going.
I have not been when the first mayor committee was set up. We decided that Mike Brown, the borough manager, would partake, and then I did later on partake in some of those. But I have not been partaking when Glen Farne has been there. But I can find out for sure if that is a true statement or not. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Mayor DeVries? See none. Thank you very much, Mayor DeVries, for joining us today. Next up, we have Mayor Mindy O'Neill, City of Fairbanks. Mayor O'Neill, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Buesel and members of the Senate Resources Committee. It's an honor to be here with you today and to speak on behalf of the City of Fairbanks. For the record, my name is Mindy O'Neill. I'm the mayor of the City of Fairbanks. The city appreciates the significant work that has gone into SB 280 for version G. We recognize that this version makes meaningful improvements, particularly in acknowledging community impacts, providing statewide revenue sharing, and requiring a Fairbanks spur line with in-state access and price protection. Those are very important steps forward, and we want to start by recognizing that. There is a few key issues that we wanted to highlight. While the City of Fairbanks is not on the main pipeline route, we will absolutely be on the front lines of construction impacts. As the primary logistics hub for Interior Alaska, Fairbanks will serve as a staging area for workers, equipment, and materials. That means we expect significant and immediate impacts to city services, particularly police, fire, EMS, dispatch, road maintenance, and our public infrastructure. In short, while the pipeline may not run through the city, the impact surely will. Version G does provide some tools that help us address this. First, the community impact fee set at $1 million per mile of pipeline constructed creates a funding pool that can be used to support impacted communities. Second, the statewide per capita distribution of pipeline revenues ensures that Fairbanks is not entirely excluded from the project benefits, and we appreciate that. And third, the requirement for a direct spur line to Fairbanks, along with price caps and in-state priority access, will absolutely help ensure that the interior will see long-term energy benefits that are crippling our community. So we appreciate all of those provisions. Our concern is that the support for communities like Fairbanks is not guaranteed, and it may not arrive when we need it. The impact fee funding appears to be discretionary, depending on legislative appropriation, and we all know how that can go sometimes. And the bill does not clearly define eligibility for communities that are not on the pipeline corridor, but will experience substantial indirect impacts. Additionally, the timing is a concern. The cost to our community, staffing, equipment, infrastructure strain will begin as soon as construction activity ramps up, maybe even sooner than that. But under the current structure, funding could lag behind those impacts. So from our perspective, there are a few targeted improvements that would make the bill much stronger. First, we recommend explicitly recognizing hub and community support communities like Fairbanks as eligible for impact funding, not just communities along the route. Second, we suggest establishing a targeted allocation or set aside for municipalities that can demonstrate significant service impacts so that funding is not diluted solely through mileage or statewide population formulas. And third, we encourage the committee to consider making at least a portion of the impact funding predictable and formula-based rather than entirely discretionary so communities can plan and respond effectively. And finally, we believe the bill should allow for earlier pre-construction funding because communities need to prepare before the impacts fully arrive, not after. In closing, the City of Fairbanks supports the goal of advancing a gas line project that benefits all Alaskans, and version G is a strong step in that direction. But to make it work for communities like ours, the bill should ensure that those bearing real and immediate impacts, whether on the route or not, have reliable, timely, and adequate support. And I'll just add that if anybody has not read the book from Dermot Cole, Amazing Pipeline Stories, How the Building of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline Transformed Life in America's Last Frontier, you should, because it gives a precursor to what happened back then and what we could be seeing again. So thank you so much for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mayor O'Neill. I appreciate your comments. I'll add, I actually was here during the building of TAPS and was from Fairbanks, though I was working in Anchorage at the time. So questions for Mayor O'Neill. Yes, Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So Mayor O'Neill, I was wondering, we've seen some price spikes around the Fairbanks area for electricity and gas. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what you're looking forward to or anticipating if we can get energy costs down.
We have folks in our community who are looking at 30 to 40% mm-hmm. of their income spent on energy. And while compared to some of the other places around the state that are off the road system, this is pretty detrimental for us. And it's not unusual, it's just getting higher and getting worse. So that means it's harder for businesses to stay open. It's harder to make our payments. Food is more expensive, gas is more expensive. Certainly, I think everybody's feeling that across the state. But with the added increase to our electricity and heating fuel costs, especially with the past ridiculous winter that we had, a very, very hard winter, very cold, we're feeling the impacts for sure.
Okay.
Any other questions for Mayor O'Neill?
Yes, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thanks for being online, Mayor O'Neill. So I guess the question that Senator Meyer asked about was, you know, like what I think having a stable, clean natural gas supply is something that's really important. In the meantime, I know that electricity rates are rising in Fairbanks specifically because we've got those several coal burning power plants in the district, but then Golden Valley, for instance, is also utilizing oil heat, naphtha, to function, to create the extra spin. Has there been any talk about how much cost that would increase based on a potential increase of demand? And then I got a second question basically on housing for the same reasons.
Our conversations have been, I would say, very preliminary. It's kind of like this has been a 50-year-old promise that hasn't come through. And so how much time do we actually spend planning on this before we have something in black and white? And so while we're talking about it, any real detail, it hasn't been discussed.
Follow up, Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up, and as far as housing goes, I know that housing has been something the interior has been sort of battling most recently with, the lack of housing, and particularly for families from the military, because of the military growth, we've seen sort of outsized growth in the interior area, 54 new jets, fifth-gen jets, and then now four KC-135s being stationed at Eielson. So big, big thousands of people potentially coming to Fairbanks. How has the city and borough negotiated those types of discussions with sort of what we have is a kind of an overall lack of housing across the state?
First of all, the military has had to make some pretty tough decisions for servicemen and women coming to the interior. They're often not allowed to bring their families, which is a hardship on them, especially brand new community. And that's been the solution to the problem, as you stated, of lack of housing. There is a will to build housing. We're facing circumstances that are the same everywhere, short building season, workforce problems and materials. But our communities have worked on tax incentives, tax rebates, and some other financing models that help bring down those risks to builders and start to work on affordable housing and workforce housing as the focus.
Thank you.
Very good. Mayor O'Neill, when Mayor Hopkins spoke to us, he talked about Tiger Team meetings. Have those meetings had any discussion about this gas pipeline and what policies might be beneficial?
Yeah, we did have an initial Tiger Team meeting with Glen Farm about 2 weeks ago. It was, I would say, just a very high level conversation about the impacts to Fairbanks, and there was an opportunity to share the same concerns that I shared here today. We've really focused that Tiger Team into an oil and gas pipeline Tiger Team. So we're focused on that during our meetings, which are about every 2 weeks.
Gotcha. You mentioned, and the others, Mayor Noel also brought up the delay in the impact payments. And that is certainly something that this committee recognizes. Those impacts are going to be significantly expensive from the get-go. I mean, before there's any pipe in the ground and any $1 million a mile being assessed for impact. I appreciated your comments and the other and Mayor Noel's comments about the process of securing the money, that is having to go through legislative appropriation or through DCCD. If you or your team have any specific suggestions on how we could improve that, we would be open to that. I have to admit, I am somewhat biased toward Fairbanks since I was born and raised there. But I because of that, I know exactly what you're dealing with and will be dealing with. So any specific ideas that you have, we would be open to.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. I appreciate that. And I would underscore Mayor Noel's suggestion of direct payment to communities similar to the community impact grants that we receive, or community assistance, I guess it's called.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Well, thank you for spending time with us this afternoon. Appreciate your testimony. Let's see. Mayor Verhagen isn't here. He was not sure he could join us. That's the mayor of Nenana. Hmm. However, the policy director of the mayor of Anchorage, Nolan Clauda, is online. Welcome, Mr. Clauda. Please identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Nolan Clauda, and I am the policy director for Mayor Suzanne LaPrance at the municipality of Anchorage. I want to thank the committee for the opportunity to weigh in. Want to start off saying that that the mayor strongly supports the gas line project moving forward and views this as a huge positive, and municipality is certainly going to benefit economically and in terms of energy resilience and cost. So we thank the committee for tackling this issue. We're in a little bit of a different position, compared to some of the other municipalities that you've heard from, in that we don't have any actual mileage of pipeline, that falls within our boundaries. So we wouldn't be receiving any direct tax revenues, either under the existing law or under the original version of this bill. But at the same time, we will be deeply impacted. There's going to be many thousands of workers that will be based in Anchorage, and will be a big logistical, operational, administrative hub. And so that's a good thing for Anchorage, but also brings impacts, more demand on our services, and transit, law enforcement, EMS response, parks, road maintenance, and all of that. And in addition, we have a very highly constrained housing market, not unlike you heard from Mayor O'Neill earlier, too. So we know that, we don't have a revenue system currently, through our property taxes that'll be super responsive to influx of workers. So we don't have a way of recouping revenue, directly from sales taxes or other kinds of mechanisms like that. We only get revenue when building occurs, and that happens very slowly. So we like the committee substitute a lot. I think the approach of distributing revenues through community assistance, especially on a per capita distribution, is something that would really benefit us. We're not looking for a cash cow here, but we do want a way that could realistically address some of the kinds of impact and some of the kinds of demands on services. So also really important that that's somewhat of a reliable revenue stream. You know, I think that there is some nervousness about that being subject to appropriation. But nonetheless, I think that that's a really smart approach that, you know, the committee substitute takes. Also, a couple of features that we really like, it looks like the committee substitute took out, there were exemptions in the original bill on taxing some properties that are used or committed for construction, operation, or maintenance of the gas line. And we had worries about what exactly that would mean and what would be exempt, because we wouldn't be getting any, you know, any tax revenue at all, but we might have exemptions on certain gas line related assets that fall within the municipality. And so we did have that concern, and so it looks like that's gone, which is something we really like. There was also a provision about sales and use taxes that are tied to gas line being exempt as well. And that could include things like bed taxes, you know, perhaps vehicle rental, fuel excise taxes, and other things. That was another one that could have resulted in us, you know, being exempt, you know, having to exempt taxes that, but not have a, you know, any kind of revenue stream to compensate for it. So you know, I think it, you know, to wrap it up, we like a lot of the changes that we're seeing here. Think this is positive. We really think it's important that Anchorage gets represented. We are going to be an impacted community, even though we're a little bit different from some of the others. So happy to take any questions that members have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Clauda. Any questions for Mr. Clauda? Not seeing any. Thank you very much for spending time with us, and please thank the mayor for allowing you to testify today. Let's see. Next up, we have Terry Eubank. This is the city manager of the city of Kenai. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Giesel, members of the Senate Resource Committee. My name is Terry Eubank, and I serve as city manager for the city of Kenai, the best place to Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I would like to express my support for your consideration given to local governments in the SB 280 Committee Substitute Version G. The city of Kenai is a home rule municipality located within an organized borough. The city is financially responsible for the municipal services it provides, including police, fire, streets, public works, water and sewer utilities, parks and recreation, and airport and general government services. These services are provided without direct financial assistance from the Kenai Peninsula Borough. The city funds operations primarily through local sales tax and property tax. The Alaska LNG project has the potential to be transformative for the state of Alaska, but it will also create substantial impacts for the city of Kenai. Kenai will be the closest city to have a significant portion of the project, including the LNG liquefaction and export facility, yet no portion of the project is expected to be located within the city's boundaries. As a result, the city may experience major impacts without directly benefiting from project property taxes or the tax structure proposed under the original version of SB 280. Those impacts include increased demand at the Kenai Municipal Airport, which is one of only three municipally owned Part 139 airports in Alaska. Increased traffic and transportation impacts, unless all materials delivered by sea to the Nikiski dock, those materials will flow through the city of Kenai to get to the construction site. Increased housing pressure. In a recently completed statistically valid survey, 74% of Kenai residents indicated the city already faces a housing availability and affordability challenge. This project will significantly worsen those conditions without mitigation. Increased emergency service demand, additional traffic, workforce activity, and population growth will likely increase calls for police, fire, and EMS services, both within the city limits and in surrounding areas through automatic and mutual aid responses. Increased demand on water and sewer infrastructure associated with temporary construction related to population growth. And workforce competition. The city may face challenges in what is already a very competitive labor market, retaining and recruiting employees as labor is drawn to higher paying construction jobs. The original version of SB 280 did not provide meaningful mechanism to help communities fund these increased services, service demands, or the capital improvements needed to respond to them. While city sales taxes and property tax revenue may increase over time, those revenues are uncertain, delayed, and unlikely to cover the near-term infrastructure and service impacts. Version G improves that framework by recognizing impacts to local communities and creating tools to address them, including a clear statutory revenue sharing formula, construction impact payments for affected communities, and improved transparency and legislative oversight. Tax policy is an important component of the project. However, the structure that does not recognize the direct and indirect costs borne by nearby municipalities will create inequities and local hardship. Keeping energy costs low for Alaskans is important, but it should not come at the expense of a few host communities. Without the consideration given in Version G, the city of Kenai and its approximately 8,000 residents could be left to absorb the cost of increased services and infrastructure demands created by the project. And thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Eubank. Senator Dunbar has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question actually more for you or for, I don't know if Ms. Kawasaki is able to answer, but it just something occurred to me. So this obviously is the city manager for the city of Kenai, not the Kenai borough. Mm-hmm. The AVT portion associated with the LNG export facility was to Kenai, but was that the Kenai borough? And just the Kenai borough, was there a way to have that funding flow down to the local communities within the Kenai borough?
I can have Ms. Kawasaki come forward to answer that question.
Madam Chair.
Yes. In the meantime, Senator Willikowski.
While we're waiting, I have a question for Mr. Eubank. Appreciate your testimony. Have you been in discussions with Glenfarne about a PILT or any property tax discussions at all with them or with the governor's office?
Yeah, thank you, Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. You know, I had my first conversation this morning. So, no, I don't think people have been envisioning, again, the city of Kenai in those talks because, again, the construction is not taking place inside the city of Kenai.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski?
I don't know the area well enough, but which community is the construction being taken place in? Is it Soldotna then, or is it in
Nikiski?
Does it run through Kenai at all? Because if it runs through Kenai, I would presume you should get property taxes on it.
Again, thank you, Senator Wilikowski, to the chair. No, it's going to be within the borough's jurisdiction. It'll take place out in Nikiski, and it will not be within the city of Kenai's municipal boundaries. But all of the traffic will be coming through the municipal boundaries of the city of Kenai, is the point.
So, Mr. Eubank, could you I actually am familiar with the area. I used to have it as part of my district, so I'm pretty familiar with it. But could you describe for the rest of the committee, let's say that materials were being delivered to Seward and they were to be transported to the site there in Nikiski. Can you describe the roads and what communities that material would pass through?
Absolutely, Senator Diesel. So coming from Seward, they would take, Highway 1 out of Seward until they reached about the Cooper Landing area. Then they would take the Sterling Highway through Cooper Landing. That would progress through Sterling into Soldotna. When they got in Soldotna, they would turn right, head towards Kenai on the Kenai Spur Highway, passing through Kenai and progressing out towards Nikiski. And that Nikiski is where the liquefaction plant is slated to be built.
Perfect. Thank you for describing that. So it actually impacts quite a few communities as it makes its way. And thanks for describing that. We'll get some maps at some point. Senator Dunbar, returning to your question, or
and I'll say Moose Pass, you are not forgotten.
Moose Pass, that's right.
So yes. Actually, I have two little questions. That's all right, Mr. Eubank. I'm just razzing you. Actually, I had a question for you, Mr. Eubank, before I turn to Ms. Kawasaki. You said you had your first convo today. Was that with the governor's office or with Glenn Farn?
Yes, sir, Senator Dunbar. It was with representatives from Glenn Farn.
Very good. Thank you for that. So, Ms. Kawasaki, going back to you, and I haven't turned to that page yet, but for the AVT portion associated with the LNG pipeline in particular, and of course there is also some pipe as well that is going to go through the borough. But for that, when we say it's going to Kenai, does that mean the borough of Kenai? And is there any way to ensure that some of that, very large chunk of revenue from the LNG export facility goes to some of the other communities? I imagine Soldotna probably is interested, but certainly Kenai.
Ms. Kawasaki, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee, and thank you, Senator Dunbar, for the question. The way that the formula...
Please introduce yourself for the record. Thank you.
My name is Tony Kawasaki. I am Senate Majority Legal Counsel. In the committee substitute that we introduced on Monday, which is version G, there is a formula that would have revenue sharing between the state and the municipalities and the state through the community assistance program for the gas pipeline. And under the community assistance program, the funds would be distributed to communities on a per capita basis. And so Kenai for the pipeline would receive, the municipality of Kenai would receive funding through miles of pipe and would also receive funding through the per capita program under the community assistance program. My understanding is that within the community assistance program, that cities contained within boroughs are also expected to receive funding under that program. And I believe, I know that DCCED in the past was online, they would have a better understanding of how that is shared to cities contained within boroughs. And then secondly, the other mechanism for extending funds to communities that are impacted would be through the community impacts fee and allocation program that is currently structured within the CS for SB 280.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, but before that happens, I'll just call out the pages on page 29 and 30 of committee substitute version G. It talks about allocation of the volumetric tax, and it calls out specifically Kenai Peninsula Borough. Mm-hmm. Under allocation of community impact fee, it does say municipalities versus communities or cities. He's not the only person to, Mr. Eubank is not the only person to call that out. Senator Dunbar, follow up.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that satisfactory, that answers my question. That is to say, we've got several funding streams. The 50% of the gas pipeline going into the CAP, the community assistance program, could be given to these municipalities, but they have to go through some kind of application for it. It wouldn't be dedicated, or sort of by right. And then you've got the per mile that similarly would go there. But in the case of the gas treatment plant and the LNG export facility, it probably is cleaner and simpler to provide all the money to the North Slope Borough and the Kenai Peninsula Borough. But that we will be relying on particularly the Kenai Borough to manage a very large amount of money. And hopefully they are able to direct that to a variety of local governments. I don't necessarily think that we should change that provision, but I think it's worth considering that the money doesn't have an automatic way to get to some of the impacted communities like Soldotna or Kenai. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Co, or excuse me, Senator Wilikowski.
Thank you. For Mr. Eubank, I presume the city of Kenai is part of the Kenai Peninsula Borough, and I'm just curious that the mechanism, is there a mechanism by which property taxes that go to the Kenai Peninsula Borough are passed on to the local cities and other communities within the Peninsula Borough?
Yeah, thank you, Senator Dunbar, to the chair. Not that I'm aware of. I mean, currently we have the power as a home rule municipality to assess our own mill rate, but that is only on property located within the city. I think the powers of a second-class borough are both created and limited in statute and by the voters of the Kenai Peninsula Borough. So I don't know of a direct mechanism like you're talking about. I can give you one example. Like, the Kenai Peninsula Borough has not adopted area-wide economic development powers. We have discussions, numerous discussions about economic development and the borough's ability to participate inside one of the incorporated cities, but because they don't have area-wide powers, they can only operate in the borough jurisdiction, not inside an incorporated city. So I don't think the mechanism is there like you think. And, you know, like some of the other mayors have discussed here today, I don't think the city is particularly keen on being beholden to funding flowing through the state to the borough. We have to go through two layers of government trying to get a reasonable allocation for the impacts on our community. We'd like to have a seat at the table.
Senator Wilikowski, follow up.
I'm just curious. I see your concerns, and I'm wrestling with the notion of how we fix it. How do we put in statute, or do we even fix it at all, or do we just leave it up to the local municipalities to make this decision? How would you recommend we address this issue?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. One I probably don't have a great answer for right now. I do think on project impacts and impact aid, it may be better for the city to directly negotiate with the project to provide impact funding that flows directly to the city. On a long-term basis, you know, maybe our property taxes and sales taxes that we are able to levy, are able to support city services. I think the greatest concern is the direct impact of the project itself during the construction phase and the new services that are going to be brought to or demanded in our town.
Follow up, Senator Wilikowski.
I guess not to belabor the point, but you have no leverage with the, you know, no disrespect, but your community has no leverage with Glen Farm. They if this project were to go forward, they would owe you nothing, and as current law stands, and so you have no negotiating power at this point. They don't have to give you anything at all. And so and that goes for all the local communities, the Moose Passes, the Soldotnas. If the pipeline or the project doesn't touch the community, then absent the state taking some action to compel them, it would appear to me like there's no leverage for local communities to get revenue for, even though they could be impacted tremendously. Maybe that's a comment more than a question, but.
You know, Senator Wilikowski, that's exactly why Mr. Eubank and others were invited today. Mayor Verhagen from Nenana was unable to join us. I don't see the city manager of Seward or Whittier was able to make it either, but those are other communities that are going to be impacted. So we can hope to hear from them at another time. But these are important questions. Senator Myers.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So Mr. Eubank, I'm curious, in the past, I don't know how long you've been in office, but in the past, if there's been large-scale development in the area but outside of the city limits that has impacted you, has the borough stepped in to transfer some money or assist with services in other ways, you know, lending over some EMS or something along those lines to help out?
Yeah, thank you, Senator. Great question through the chair. You know, I've been with the city 18 years, with the Kenai Borough 10 years prior to that, and I'm not aware of any project, certainly of this magnitude, that, like what you're describing. I hear stories of when large-scale development took place in Nikiski, when they built the fertilizer plant out there and some of the other industrial complex. But some of those companies actually physically built some of the subdivisions in the city of Kenai. They built the housing for the workers that were not only there for construction, but for also that were going to operate it once placed in service. So it was the companies that specifically did that. But I'm not aware of any situations where revenue has flowed through the borough to the municipalities like you're describing.
Okay. Follow-up, Senator Myers?
Actually, I've got a question for Ms. Kawasaki since she's here.
Yes.
So with the distributions that we're talking about in here being on a per capita basis, does that mean that we could, with our unique borough city structure, we could end up double counting some people? You know, Fairbanks, you've got the city and then the borough. Matsu, you've got, at a minimum, you got Houston, Willow, Wasilla, along, you know, pretty close to the route. You know, Kenai, as we're mentioning, we've got Kenai, Soldotna, and Nikiski. Could we end up double counting people in that way?
For the record, Sonia Kawasaki, Senate Majority Counsel. Senator Myers, thank you for the question through the chair. That is actually an interesting question, and I would have to defer to DCCED again for how the community assistance program is managed, because I did wonder about that because of my own hometown, Fairbanks. I live in city limits, and I know that the borough, we're contained in the borough, and that is a curiosity of mine as well. So we'll have to get to the bottom of that for you, Senator.
Okay, thank you.
Good. Further questions for Mr. Eubank? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Eubank, for joining us. Helpful information, and if you do have any thoughts or suggestions, we're open to your input. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Chair.
As I said, Kate Sorensen, City Manager of Seward, Jackie Wild, City Manager of Whittier, were not available. We'll have them at another time. I did want to let the committee know we did reach out to Mayor Pocketuck, Mayor Hopkins, and Mayor Michiki, none of whom were available today. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It did occur to me, I don't know if they have a mayor or a city manager, but does the community of Nikiski have anyone that we could hear from at some point? That is where the plant is physically going to be. I'd like to hear from them if I could.
I will check into that. I don't think, again, I had that as part of my district, and I don't remember there was a city government for Nikiski, but I will check into that.
Roger.
And that would be good to have him.
As a child, I knew it mostly for its water park.
Gotcha. Yes, the water park. Yes, very good. All right. So that ends the community officials that were invited to speak today. I also invited the Department of Natural Resources to join us. And we have Derek Nottingham. He's the acting deputy commissioner for DNR. And Weston Nash, commercial analyst, Division of Oil and Gas, Department of Natural Resources. One of the requests that I had made to them was to provide us with a map that would actually show where the municipal borders were, the borough borders and the cities and so forth, but also the unincorporated areas of the state, which the state of Alaska would be responsible for overseeing, that we're responsible for overseeing. They were not able to produce that map in such a short time, so that will be forthcoming. But in the meantime, if there were any questions for them, I actually have two. So I'll start out with my two questions if you think of any others. Acting Deputy Commissioner Nottingham, I'll ask you, but if you feel that Mr. Nash is a better choice of answer, we have been informed that the commissioner has deferred any tax on gravel. And it, as we, as I recall, this was a deferment of tax on gravel resources for the project. But I wanted clarification of that. Who gets the free gravel? Can you clarify that for us, Mr. Nottingham?
Yep. Thank you, Senator Giesel. Yeah, this is Derek Nottingham, Acting Deputy Commissioner of DNR. Right now, I'm not aware of any action that the commissioner has taken or has been requested to take on that. I'd have to get back to the committee. I could defer to Mr. Nash here as well, but I don't believe he has any information on that either.
Mr. Nash, any information?
Yeah, for the record, this is Weston Nash, commercial analyst with DNR. No, unfortunately, I do not have any information. One correction, it's not a tax. It is generally considered a sale, just for point of clarification, which is, but I do not know of any, the full decision as to which parties may or may not be able to receive free gravel, and if that decision has even been formally made.
All right. Thank you. I actually believe I've seen a press release stating it. It was a while ago, but I was hoping the Division of Mining, Land, and Water would be on, who probably would have the information. All right. So let me ask you about another question that we've been contemplating, and that is the idea of a DRNR requirement for this infrastructure at the end of life. What provisions are in place already for that kind of dismantlement, removal, and restoration?
Chair Giesel, this is, again, Weston Nash for the record. So currently in place, to answer your question directly, there are no provisions in place now, but that is because there are also no assets on the ground right now. As part of the authorization to proceed with other similar projects, obviously of smaller scale, we also require what we have been calling a financial assurances agreement that does implement a DRNR requirement, which we have different remedies as to fund that requirement. Be it a bond or a sinking fund that is funded throughout the life of and production. In this case, it would be the life of just the project. We have not had those conversations with Glen Farne or anyone else in the project, but that is another piece that would be implemented before, that would need to be implemented before construction commences.
Very good. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to follow up on that, do you have a statutory requirement to do that with the project? And is there discretion? Could the administration choose of their own volition to waive that requirement?
Senator Dunbar, through the chair, there is no specific statute. The statute authorizes the commissioner to collect an amount. It is not a requirement, and so if it could be waived at the discretion of the commissioner under current statute.
Very good, thank you. In the meantime, my trusty staff have provided me with actually the regulation package. It was effective March 14th. It's a proposed, DNR proposed regulations. Note, they became effective March 14th, 2026, 11 AAC 71090, pricing for sale of materials. It is in the public interest and serves a public purpose that the department convey material to a state agency or public corporation at a base price of $0 per cubic yard and without retaining a reversionary interest. and it's sale of materials. It doesn't specifically say gravel, but my understanding was that was what this regulation specifically referred to. Then there's a further regulation, 11 AAC 98, a new section which defines public purpose. And it basically just says a public purpose means use or disposal of state land or resources that contributes a substantial benefit to the general public, including public subdivisions, private commercial industry, et cetera. So it was a regulatory package that was put up by the department. So neither of you have any knowledge of that?
Yeah, again, for the record, Chair Diesel, this is Weston Matt. No, because that is material sales are typically done through the Division of Mining, Land, and Water, which is outside of Division of Oil and Gas, unfortunately. And yeah, I apologize for not knowing the details of that regulation.
That's all right. I appreciate you being on to even have the conversation with us. So thank you. Any other questions, Senator Wilikowski?
On the proposed pipeline route, do you have any estimate of how many cubic yards of gravel would be used for this project, conveyed from the state to the users at no cost?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, this is Derek Nottingham, acting deputy commissioner. I do not have that information.
Senator Wilikowski.
There was an article in the Alaska Beacon on January 9th, 2026, where they estimated that for the Ambler Road project, it would need between 15 million and 22 million cubic yards of gravel, plus an additional 220,000 to 347,000 yards annually for maintenance. Do those numbers sound about right to you, or do you recall those providing those numbers?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair again, Derek Nottingham. I really don't have a good estimate of what the requirements for gravel would be or a GLMD.
Senator Wilikowski.
In that article, it also noted that price charts showed the state selling gravel for $3 per cubic yard in interior Alaska. Does that sound about right to you?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, I have tangentially been involved with material sales as the director of Division of Oil and Gas through SPCS. However, I don't have any specific information on what the price of gravel would be at the tip of my fingers.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
And if the Ambler Road required between 15 million and 22 million yards of gravel, it was estimated that that would have cost between $45 million and $66 million for the construction alone. Sure. Is that at $3 per cubic foot? And do those numbers sound about right to you?
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, as I mentioned, I really don't have a good feel for the numbers there.
Yes, yeah. Senator Wilikowski.
Could you get us an estimate of how many cubic yards of gravel the state intends to provide or expects that it will provide for this gas line project, whether it be the liquefaction plant, the pipeline route, the roads, the gas treatment plant, or any other required development, man camps, other things. Could you get us the number of yards that you expect would be provided by the state, and also the price per cubic yard and the total estimate per year for maintenance that you expect the state? Because that all figures into what the state is providing in relief to the developer.
Senator Wilikowski, through the chair, yes. We understand the nature of the request, and we'll do our best to provide whatever information we can.
Thank you, Mr. Nottingham. Senator Rauscher had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, is Frank Richards online?
Yes, he is.
Would we be able to ask him about gravel regulations in lieu of this project?
Mr. Richards, what information would you have related to the subject of gravel, quantity, price, etc.?
Yes, Madam Chair, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, let me just mute my other speaker. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. In regards to the question around gravel, specifically from state lands, I'm using a rough estimate of about 20 million yards that will be required from the state material sites. This was looking at the material that will be needed not only for pipe storage yards, but the access roads, pipe bedding, and on the north slope again around the gas treatment plant. So that's a fairly significant amount of gravel that will be coming from state lands. Now, there'll also be gravel that will be coming from federal lands, and that's along the BLM right away, along PLL 5150. And if that is transferred to the state, then those additional materials would be coming from then state lands. So I don't have that number off the top of my head. But in regards to the commercial cost, looking at DNR published rates most recently for Interior Alaska, it was published at about $3 per cubic yard. So for 20 million yards, that equates to $60 million. And looking at what the new regulations that are in place that you referenced, Madam Chair, is that a distinct corporation such as AGDC could receive the gravel from DNR, apply to DNR for the gravel, and receive it at the cost. And then our goal would be able to utilize that and provide it to the project and negotiate again with the developer for an equity stake, so that the state would be valuing the gravel and then using it to be able to acquire equity in the project for the benefit of the state.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Richards. Any further questions? All right. I am looking forward to hearing from Division of Mining, Land, and Water as well related to the mapping question and other issues related to the gravel materials. Seeing no other questions, Senator Myers, anything? Okay. You looked like you might have had a question there.
I was going to ask the same question Senator Rauscher had.
All right. Very good. With that, that completes our list of folks that had been invited to speak today. So that meets the end of our agenda. So our next meeting will be on Thursday, April 23rd. That's tomorrow at 9 a.m. At that time, we're going to hear from industry. And by industry, what I'm referring to is the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, the Alaska Alliance, and the Resource Development Council of Alaska will be testifying on Senate Bill 280. So at this time, the meeting will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect the time is 4:37 p.m.